Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we're going to start off our week with memoirs of a firefighter paramedic. Not many of us would perhaps choose that line of endeavor because it requires quite a bit to qualify. My guest is Bruce Zemelski. And Bruce is going to give us a little bit of background on what it takes to become a firefighter paramedic, and we're talking to him in New Jersey, I believe, right now. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here, and I'm in Georgia, not New Jersey.
Oh, you're in Georgia, not New Jersey. You began your career in New Jersey. That's where I got the New Jersey from. You began it in New Jersey in 1972.
Correct.
Okay, now, Bruce, give us a little bit of a background on why it is you have, why you think you developed it. When you were a kid, did you see the fire engines go by and you said, gee, I want to be up there with a Dalmatian? What was it that pushed your buttons that made you decide that this is what you wanted to do?
You were very close.
It was a Dalmatian.
Right.
Okay.
When I was in grammar school kids always taking a day trip to the fire station.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, did that, and I fell in love right there. The big, shiny red trucks with all the lights and the sirens and all these guys running around in those fancy helmets and boots and coats, and that's when it started.
Now, I want people to know that you became a full-time firefighter paramedic in the state of Florida as well as Georgia. You were certified as a firefighter, emergency medical technician, and a paramedic. And you became a CPR instructor, a fire instructor, and an EMT instructor. And you went about teaching people how to do things, but you really got involved in your working environment, and you taught courses in fire, rescue, and EMS, and you just kept on moving, and then you moved to New York to become the Assistant Director of Health and Safety for the New York City Emergency Medical Service, which later became the Fire Department of New York, where you worked as the Acting OSHA Coordinator before you retired and moved back to Georgia. Now, I was not aware that you could get a degree in emergency services management and safety engineering. I knew about that. But emergency services management, is that a specialty area that you have to go to a certain school to get that training in?
There are a few schools that offer it, not many. But what they realized is that as important as college is, and with the fire service being the way it was and having to go through so much training, because they're constantly training.
Mm-hmm.
You're never through.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized that it would be a good thing to offer this degree. So I was fortunate enough to get into a program that I could get that degree. And so, yes, I went on for my bachelor's in emergency services management, which basically is a business degree, but I specialized
mm-hmm.
in emergency services. And then I went on, and over the Internet, I completed the coursework to get my master's in safety engineering.
Now, for some of the people who are listening, they may have members of their own family that would just love to be involved in becoming a firefighter or involved in the paramedic environment, and there is a growing need, especially in medical services, big time, because we have a substantial, an amount of population to take care of. give us a little bit of background on what it takes today to be a firefighter. I remember knowing some people that really wanted to get in. Physically, you had to be, you know, sort of like King Kong. You had to be able to carry 250 pounds on your shoulders, you know, walk upside down. And I'm exaggerating a little bit there. But, I mean, the physical regimen of fitness that you had to fit into as a firefighter was phenomenal. Does a paramedic have the same needs? I mean, you got both of these together. Tell us what those qualifications are in the modern world.
The firefighter part is much more difficult as far as the physical agility test. And you were very close. It was only 150 pounds we had to carry. But we had to walk a 4-inch wide beam carrying it. So, you know.
I'm out. Never make it. No way. Holy Joseph. Oh, my goodness.
But it was, you know, different departments do different things. And over the years, it's changed a little bit. But there still is a physical agility test that everybody has to pass in order to even be considered for the job. And that's because the job is so physically demanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this isn't something where you're just sitting at a desk all day. You're out there humping, and you've got to really be in good physical shape in order to do it. Now, as far as the EMT paramedic side of it goes, you still have to be in good shape, but not as good. It's not as strenuous as the firefighting is.
Mm-hmm.
Although nowadays most people are becoming firefighters, and then the firefighters, the departments are requiring you become an EMT also.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to go on for the paramedic, but they are requiring you become an EMT.
Well, and that makes sense to me. I think that's appropriate.
Absolutely, yes. It's the way to go. You need to do both. And then the paramedic, that's, you know, if you want to go ahead and be able to push the medications and do the things the paramedics do, you know, that's further training. And that's not so much with the fire side, but, you know, they're both tied together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's important. I really do. I think that in today's world, gee whiz, you do have that education. Now, one of the biggest things that I became aware of, and this was back in the early 90s, and that is that the firefighters today, and then back in the 90s, and here we are, you know, 2010, so we're talking 20 years ago, they had a primary concern about chemicals because we have, what is it, since the 50s, we've got something like 75,000 new chemical compounds that are used commercially. And there's a lot of manufacturing facilities that have compounds, and you can have a fire. And this one man was telling me, and he was experienced. He was a trainer. He had been a firefighter, my goodness, I think for 30 years involved, you know, in the process. And he said, we have to be educated because we just can't send our men in. There are liquid chemicals that if they step into it and they have no odor, they have no color to them, they look like water, and you step into it and your feet are gone. You know, they eat your boots and everything before you know it, and you can be critically injured. So you guys have a lot of things to contend with that the average individual doesn't even remotely connect to because that's not part of their work.
Exactly. And the hazardous chemicals is a very growing concern. You know, you said 75,000. The number grows monthly because the scientists are always coming up with new compounds and whatnot. And, yes, it's not just fighting fires. There's a lot more to it than that. And the hazardous chemical side of it is a specialty that a lot of departments, almost all your departments, they're having specialized units strictly to handle the hazardous chemical aspect. So all firefighters need the basic training in hazardous chemicals, and then they can go on to get further training and be on a specialized team to handle the chemicals.
Now, your book is about your memoirs, being a firefighter paramedic, and you make a statement that as being in that kind of a position, you see people at their best and at their absolute worst.
Yes.
What was one of, let's aim for the worst, what was one of your worst experiences that you had that just to you burned itself into your brain and said, I wouldn't wish this on anybody?
Well, with me, it was children. Children was the hardest thing to deal with. In my first year, I had responded to a fire where we saved two children, but we lost two, and they were just completely burned up. And we had to pull their bodies out. And the parents of the children were just devastated. I mean, you know, this is something you don't want to have to deal with. But you do, you know, and it's bad.
Now, something, excuse me, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that there's also, you know, other things that when people themselves are sick or whatever, you know, and you go to talk to them and try to deal with them, they're not themselves, and you're dealing with a monster.
That's very true. And it's something, sometimes people can be on medications that maybe create problems, and they get excited. I mean, there's all kinds of things. That's where having training is really important. And also having the physical strength to be able to deal with it. Now, I want to ask you a question about women in firefighting, and I want to go into some of your stories that you have in your book about your personal experiences. Are there many women that have an interest in becoming firefighters? I've met a few, and even in the paramedic area, there have been women that have really wanted to get into it. But the firefighting, that is something where women often don't have the upper body strength unless they really train to have that upper body strength that men have often quite naturally. What do you find it has been a change relative to women working in firefighting?
There's more women in it now than there used to be. And you're right. Most women don't have the physical strength. But then again, there's a lot of men that don't have the physical strength that's required.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's why they have the physical agility test.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just because you're a woman does not mean you can't do it. But you can, you know, if this is something you really want as a woman, you work out, you build yourself up, and you'll be able to pass the physical agility test and become a firefighter. But it's something you have to really want, because it's going to take a lot more for a woman to get to that physical point than for a man.
That's
true. But there are men that can't do it either. So
that's true. That's very true, and I think the point is well taken. I also wanted to ask, relative to that, do you have to go through annual physical regimen to show that you're really still in good physical shape?
That depends on the department.
Okay.
Each department has their own standards. On an average, you have to maintain a certain level of physical fitness. They don't test you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But they do keep an eye on you, and they see how you handle the physical aspects of the job. And at times they might come to you and say, look, you need to lose some weight. You need to start working out more on your days off. Or most departments have a facility in their station where they can work out to maintain this physical fitness part. The problem is if you stop the working out, you do what I did and you get fat.
Right. And that is something that they really have to be attentive to, because the amount of equipment, what is it, about 75 to 100 pounds of equipment sometimes that you have to wear?
Yes, your turnout gear itself, your helmet, coat, boots, pants, gloves, that's going to usually weigh somewhere between 15 and 20 pounds. And then your air pack, depending on which type and which brand, could weigh anywhere from 50 to 60 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And this is before you even pick up the first length of hose.
What's about the weight? What's the weight of that hose? Because that the hoses, the equipment that is on fire trucks is very specialized, and those hoses are specially made, and the amount of pressure that comes out to get water through those hoses is just phenomenal. What kind of weight are we talking about there?
You're talking about an empty section of hose is 50 feet, and it weighs roughly 20 to 25 pounds. Depending on what type of material the couplings are made out of. And then when you fill up that line with water, water weighs 8.1 pounds per gallon. and I think it's 10 gallons is in a 50-foot section of hose. So, yes, it's a lot of weight to have to be carrying and pulling around.
Plus wearing all of the clothing, air apparatus if it's needed, all of that. It's just, it's really, that's why you must be in good shape. Let's go back to the 70s, because there have been many things that through your career you evolved through, and that is what you talk about in your book, Memoirs of a Firefighter Paramedic. And in the 70s, there was a lot of what you called racial combativeness that was going on, and you really had a challenge because the political arena was wanting you to put your life on the line, and yet you guys were having stuff thrown at you. Your lives were in danger because you were trying to fight fires. So tell us a little bit about that and how that was resolved.
Well, we were called in to fight the fires that the rioters themselves were setting, and we'd respond, and it'd be police and state police and National Guardsmen there. And we'd start fighting the fire, and then the crowd would be standing around watching us, and it'd be people throwing things at us, sticks, bottles, rocks, whatever they had. And we'd turn to the police, and we'd say, aren't you going to do something about this? And they'd say, no, we're under strict orders. We can't. And I said, wait a minute. You know, we're here trying to put out the fires that they started, and they're throwing stuff at us. We can get hurt. And they said, we're sorry, there's nothing we can do. Well, I got upset, and I said, well, if you don't do something, I will. I'll turn the hose on them. And he said, if you do that, I'll have to arrest you. And the guy I was on the hose with just looked at each other, shook our heads. The next person that threw something at us, we just turned the hose on them and knocked them down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the crowd, you know, went back, and they scattered. Me and my partner were taken to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just unbelievable. We were finally released because the chief, when he found out about it, he came down there to find out what was going on. We told him the whole story. And he called back all the units and said, nobody fight any fires. Everybody go back to the station. And he had a meeting with the mayor and said, look, I'm not going to let my people do this.
Mm-hmm.
They're all volunteers, and they're putting their life on the line. And you're not protecting us. So eventually it calmed down and got worked out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was no charges filed, but it was just one of those things we went through.
It's amazing how the pecking order, how it'll
yes.
work out sometimes. Now, you have a wonderful story about how you found two German shepherds in the living room of a home after a fire, and you thought both of them were dead, and by
yes.
golly, they weren't. You use CPR on a dog. Tell us about that experience.
I had never heard of it myself, but we responded to a house fire, and the first team that goes in trying to extinguish the fire. And me and my partner went in right behind them to look for people. And we found these two German shepherds, and we carried them outside, and neither one of them was breathing. And my partner said, well, let's do CPR on them. It works. And I said, you're kidding me. So we took off our face pieces, off our air packs, and we turned the knob to what we call free flow, meaning the air just constantly flows out, put it right there in front of the dog's face, and just started massaging the heart. And I did it to the dog I had. My partner did it to the dog he had. And both dogs came around. Absolutely shocked me.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yes,
just
it
like
is.
People. Absolutely amazing. Now, there is one story, because again, like you said, you just see so many things, and I'm sure they go on
yes,
and infinitum. But you talked about in your book, you had this 65-year-old man who was in cardiac arrest. You get him to the hospital. The doctor said, he's dead. Don't bother working on him. And everybody was shocked because you found out he wasn't. Tell us what happened with that man.
We had responded to a house, and we found this gentleman, and he was in cardiac arrest when we found him. And at the time, I was not a paramedic. I was just an EMT, but my partner was a paramedic. And, you know, he'd give him the drugs and shock him, and his heart would start to come back, and then we'd lose him again. And when we got to the hospital, he still, you know, wasn't coming around. Well, the doctor came in and examined them, and, you know, all the nurses are all doing their thing. And the doctor looks at him, checks him out, and says, he's dead, pronounce him DOA. And I was just shocked because I really felt this guy had a chance. And they took all the tubes out and everything, put the sheet up over his head and just walked out. And I stood in the room in shock because I really felt this guy was going to make it. And I'm standing there, and all of a sudden the sheet starts to move. And I pull the sheet back, and the man's eyes are open. He looks at me, and he says, get that doctor back in here. I'll tell him who's dead.
Boy, was that doctor in for a surprise.
Oh, so was I. You could have knocked me over with a feather.
Especially when you start seeing the sheet moving and the guy's been declared dead. I mean, that is something where you feel like you're in the middle of a surreal movie.
You're right.
Oh, my goodness. Now,
but there's a lot of things like that that we see out there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that is the thing. There, you really don't know exactly what you're going to walk into. You can get all the training in the world, and training is vital. It is necessary, but the actual reality of things happening, it's just amazing. Now, one of the things that came up, and this was almost unbelievable, you went to a sick call, you responded to a sick call at a youth camp, and there was someone there drinking transmission fluid. I mean, just reading those words just made me feel like I wanted to gag. What happened in that situation? That's hideous.
You're right. That is. And what had happened was it was a young kid who had become addicted to drugs, and he was sent to this youth camp to try to, you know, bring him back and help him. And he couldn't get any drugs, but apparently there was something in transmission fluid that if you drink enough of it, it'll give you a high. And they had been looking for this kid, and they called us and went out there and found him sitting in his bed with the red fluid running down his mouth and his chest and all over his hands. And he had 3 empty cans, and he was just sitting there drinking it.
And he lived after all of
yes,
that.
Yes, he did.
I'm surprised his organs weren't disintegrating with every sip.
You're right. It's very surprising.
Amazing.
But they were able to save him. But, you know, one of the things I'd like to just touch on, like you said, you can get all the training in the world, and it can't prepare you for the real world. And that's part of the reason I wrote the book. Because while I was in training and I saw these younger people coming in, they didn't know what they were getting into.
Mm-hmm.
And the emotional roller coaster that you go through is unbelievable. You can't describe it to anybody. And I wanted to try to get these people coming in and the general public who's interested in these stories to realize, hey, these people go through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a tremendous toll on you. A lot of it good, and some of it bad.
Well, briefly, you had someone that you had to respond to a call on. He had found a pygmy rattlesnake, was playing with, put it on his earlobe.
Yes.
And when it was so tiny, it looked like a long earring.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, this is just, you know, I just go, I don't believe this. This is just, and he couldn't figure out why he was sick. You've got a rattlesnake biting your earlobe. Excuse me, is the brain working? And of course, it was even, gee whiz. And he's going to get venom. But he just honestly did not know what it was, and he had to take him to the hospital. But this one that happened at the migrant workers camp, where a man had been shot with a .22 caliber pistol. Oh, my word. You got to share that one.
We responded to this migrant workers camp, and a man was standing there, and he had a little blood coming out of his forehead. And what had happened was, whatever went on, he got shot with a .22 caliber pistol. The bullet hit him right in the center of the forehead. It hit the skull, went completely around, and back out the same hole. And he could just lift his scalp right off. And there was his skull.
He had a headache.
Big headache.
I mean,
but he was conscious and standing there and talking. And I mean, you know, you just see these things and you go, what, this can't be true. This can't be happening.
Right. How does a bullet go around a head and then, you know, do such a neat incision? What kind of forensic evidence? You know, when you watch all, people watch, you know, CSI, they watch, you know, there's different programs on forensics, and gee, it's just absolutely amazing. But you have something like this. This is like a bullet with its own personality.
Exactly.
And it's just absolutely amazing, some of these stories that you have in here. And, you know, you talk about how there's a very thin line between life and death in the book. And lots of, you've seen your co-partners in this work. Many times their lives have been on the line. You talked about a guy by the name of Tony. He was a friend of yours. And you found him on the floor, not breathing. Tell us about Tony.
Tony was someone that I had known who I didn't know at the time was having problems with his wife, and they were separated, talking about divorce. And he had overdosed himself on drugs because he felt he couldn't go on without his wife. And I walk in, and there he is laying there on the floor, not breathing and his heart not beating. And I started doing CPR, waiting on the ambulance to get there, and it just wasn't his time. And he started to come around. And by the time the ambulance got there, he was sitting there talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just, you know, an amazing thing that happened.
You describe how there are so many different circumstances. Every once in a while we hear about chemical products being transported via maybe trucks or planes or trains. And you have a story in your book about a train derailment, and the engineer said he wasn't transporting any hazardous chemicals to the best of his knowledge, but there was all of this white dust. When this kind of situation happens, you call a company called Chemtrek. It's a national agency that supplies information
right.
for emergency chemical spills. And it turned out that there was danger in this spilled chemical dust. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's one of the things, like you were talking earlier, some of the hazards that we face is these hazardous chemicals. But this train had, for whatever reason, derailed. There was, I think it was 15 cars came off the track. And it was, every car, you know, was carrying something else. And it was directly across the highway from a grammar school. And when we arrived, the engineer had the list of what he was carrying, like he's supposed to. And he gave it to us, and he said, there's nothing hazardous in this. And, you know, normally you take the word for it, but we have a thing where when we have a spill, if we're not sure, or even if we are, we call Chemtrek just to make absolutely sure that there is nothing hazardous. We called Chemtrek, and they told us, yes, one of the chemicals is dangerous if it's floating in the air as a cloud. And, you know, when it was on the ground in the powder form, it was fine. But when it's floating in the air as a cloud, you can't breathe it because it will damage your lungs. None of us knew this, and, you know, apparently the engineer of the train didn't either. So we had to call in a lot of people to evacuate the school. And that was one of the times where you see people at the worst. When their parents get the word that their child's being evacuated, they come down there and they're ready to show their tail, and they just say, I want my kids and I better know what's going on and you have to tell me everything. And they can get to be pretty irate when their kids are involved.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bruce, your stories are fascinating, and for those of you listening, Memoirs of a Firefighter Paramedic, Bruce Zemelski has been my guest. It gives you a view of real life, not television fantasy stuff, real life. He talks about backdrafts. He talks about dealing with so many different levels. And if you know of anybody that's got a kid that maybe says, I want to be a firefighter when I grow up, I want to do this, I want to do that, this would be a great book to share with them because they need to understand this is not a joke. It's not a game. It does take its toll, but as Bruce says in his book, he feels that it's been worth every moment he spent doing it. Now go to his website, brucezamelski.net or .com, and his last name is Zamelsky, brucezamelski.net or .com. Bruce, thank you so much for being my guest today.
It was my pleasure. I really appreciate you having me.
Well, I've enjoyed you, and you've got a good sense of humor. Thank you so much, and I wish you the best with this
Thank
book.
You very much. I appreciate it.
You are
it.
Welcome. Memoirs of a Firefighter Paramedic, Bruce Zamelski. Check out his website. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, give me a buzz. 888-815-9756 is our worldwide toll-free telephone number. Give me a buzz, and we will chat to your heart's delight. 888-815-9756. Speaking of chatting, by the way, I am putting together 100 stories about the paranormal. It can be about ghosts, it can be about out-of-body experiences, whatever you have gone through. If you would like for me to have the story in the book, please send me an email. I'd love to hear your story. Send me an email. Send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com, Donna@DelphiInternational.com, or you can send it via snail mail to the Donna Sebo Show, at P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. And I'm compiling, we're going to take about a year to put this all together. So if you have a very significant experience, and I want to thank those of you who are sending me emails with your information, be sure to put your contact information there because the publisher, when we put the stories together in a book, will want to have that. Many times they request a release form so that they know that I have your permission to print that. Or you can even say, Donna, it's okay, you can go ahead and print it, put it in your book. But I'd love to hear from you. And again, I'm aiming for 100 stories. So whether it's out of body, near death, ghosts, whatever may be in your family. I mean, I've heard such wonderful stories, people that had very talented relatives that could do certain things. And so these stories, I think, need to be shared. And the more we can talk openly about the intuitive process, the psychic experience, the more we'll take it out of the woo-woo section. And that has always been a very strong passion of mine, especially since I've been involved in the work of mine for so many years. And I've seen the skeptics, and you have all kinds of things that go on that get, you know, bantered about like a tennis ball. And I want you to be one of those. If you submit a story, tell it with your heart. Tell it about how it affected you and its benefit, its negative. I don't care. I really want to hear your story. So again, send it to Donna at DelphiInternational.com or to the Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Valentine's Day is coming up. Just a few more days. Are you out there rushing around picking up the box of candy or whatever it is that you feel you want to do to have that special time? Maybe you want to give a gift to yourself, however you want to do it. Valentine's Day is always so much fun, and it is so colorful. The stores are always filled with brilliant colors, and, of course, chocolate is the theme. Well, I have a beautiful photograph in front of me with roses and a big box of chocolate candy and hearts, and it's just an absolutely gorgeous photograph. And Barbara Trenton wrote a poem to go along with it. She said, Valentine's Day is here again. You can see it everywhere in flower shops and candy stores. Love is in the air. And I want to say that is so true. Also, I want to let you know about the guests that are going to be coming up this week. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Owen Fitzpatrick. We're going to be talking to him overseas because he is a traveling man. He is a man that was mentored by Richard Bandler, who is considered the father of neuro-linguistic programming. And we're going to be talking about Owen's book, where he talks with Richard Bandler about many different things regarding neuro-linguistic programming. So we're going to be involved with that. And then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking about elementary love styles. Yes, Dr. Craig Martin is going to be my guest. We'll get into a little bit of astrology and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Then on Thursday, we're going to be talking about a murder mystery. It actually is a story that encompasses so many different things. I'm amazed that Anthony was even able to write about it. I just commend him because it's absolutely almost unbelievable. It's called The Road Out of Hell. Anthony Flacco is going to be my guest. And then we're going to be ending up on Friday of this week with Makeup, Don't Break Up. Dr. Bonnie Wheel is going to be my guest. So we have got a good week, lots of things, and some of it's going to be related to Valentine's and how you can, well, maybe make your relationship a little bit better. Does someone owe you some money? Now, you may wonder, Donna, why in the world are you talking about that? Well, sometimes people end up having money floating around in banks or in different places that they didn't realize was still there. An issue today that is being dealt with by many, many individuals is a bank closing. More than 120 banks closed last year. When a bank fails, customers should have immediate access to their assets. But if you've had an account that was dormant, or a CD that was left to roll over, and the bank was unable to contact you, or didn't contact you, those funds may have been designated as unclaimed. Now, Mr. David Barr of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC, says you need to track it down. So if you're one of those people that have found that because of a bank closure, you haven't been able to get to your monies, you need to go to this website, www.fdic.gov/funds/index.asp. Now, let me repeat that. www.fdic.gov/funds/index.asp. Now, if you're having trouble tracking an account because a bank's name has changed due to a merger or buyout, we've had some in our local area. They've got new signs. They've closed down because the old bank is gone. They've opened up with a new one. And you can click Bank Find at FDIC.gov to find out what the new name is. So there are ways of tracing the money. Also, credit unions, they have not had as many problems. But if you have a credit union, maybe that's failed, you can go through the NCUA, that's the National Credit Union Administration's Asset Management and Assistance Center. They will be responsible for paying you anything that you have coming. Hundreds of people are still owed money due to uncashed checks and incomplete addresses. Sherry Umbel is a representative with the Credit Union Administration. She is their spokesperson, and she said, we've got a lot of money that's just sitting here that's not been claimed. So all you have to do is pick up the phone and call the NCUA Asset Management and Assistance Center at 512-231-7900, and they'll be happy to check to see if anything's coming to you. I had a client that had something that you wouldn't ever think would happen. She was with a major national bank. She had a couple of $1 million in two different accounts. They had been dormant for a number of years. She had all the books and everything else. They had upgraded their computer system but had not included her account in it. This woman is in her 70s, late 70s, early 80s, and she finds that she doesn't have the money anymore. So she has been going through all kinds of stuff. And you just need to be aware. If you have a bank account, make sure you keep your records up. If you've had one that you've not used for a long time, be sure you keep track. Every bit of paper counts because banks can make mistakes, credit unions can make mistakes, and it's up to you, the consumer, to make sure that you don't, just like this client of mine, find that suddenly money has been absorbed and nobody knows how to track it. So you want to be wise. This is Donna Siebel. I know we'll be going on a break in just a little bit, but if you'd like to give me a buzz, call me at 888-815-9756. Now, for those of you who are listening in Alaska, I'm planning on coming up into Alaska the week of the 12th. It looks like that's going to be the time I'll be able to come up into Fairbanks and Anchorage. Also, for those of you in the Pacific Northwest, we have a fabulous event that's coming up. That's the Northwest Women's Show in Seattle, March 5th, 6th, and 7th. Now, I'm going to be there in a booth 407, but this is an event that is absolutely awesome. It is wonderful. It is perfect for you gals. There's so many wonderful events going on, so many fabulous vendors, and I'm going to be doing a forum on Friday from 1 in the afternoon until 4. I have 6 dynamic speakers. Our first hour is going to be all about money. Our second hour is going to be about alternative forms of healing, energy healing, and then our third hour is going to be about animals, taking care of them, helping them to be healthy and well. So we've just got 6 dynamic women, and they're going to be there for you to meet and to interact with, and they're all from the Pacific Northwest. So just know we're going to have a dynamic show. It's being held at the Quest Convention Center, right across from the Quest Field, what used to be known as the Safeco Field. But we've got that activity going on there at this event at the Northwest Women's Show that is just awesome. Makeup, games, clothing, you name it. It's all for We Gals, the Pacific Northwest Women's Show. It's been going on for years, and I absolutely love this event. So if you want to give me a call today, hey, 888-815-9756. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Well, I have got a story for you, and I had made a note, and then all of a sudden I lost it. It was dealing with some interesting information about certain activities that went on with a certain individual. And for the life of me, now I have misplaced it, so I am just going to have to pass it by. But I would like to share something with you about water, air, and land fireballs. Now, I don't know if you've ever seen a fireball. I have. I can remember the first time I ever saw a fireball, I was in Florida, and they were very common when you lived in Florida. I was in Miami. My family had rented a particular house, and we were warned by all the locals that when the storms in the afternoon that would come in, they said, don't touch anything because you can get electrocuted. Also, if you see fireballs in your house, don't move, just watch them. Well, that's what we saw. And I'll never forget, we had one that came into the house, and it was right in the middle of our living room. And it was a big fireball of energy, and it just stayed there for the longest time, and then all of a sudden, it just disappeared. Well, I came across this information, and there are some pretty early records about fireballs being seen throughout history. On March 19, 1897, a Captain C.D. Stuart recorded something that he saw, and he was on a Dutch ship. He was in the North Atlantic Ocean, and he saw two meteors in the sky. One was really bright and glowing, and the other one was very dark. He said it was a stormy day. It was about 66 degrees. The sky went dark, and then the ship and the sea were just illuminated. It's almost like everything was on fire. And the illuminated sphere went into the water, causing huge waves to wash over the vessel. And the air, they said, was suffocating, and the sailors were sweating profusely because it was so hot. Now, immediately after this meteor hit the water, there were huge chunks of ice that dropped onto the deck. I got more stuff to share with you, but we've got a caller. Welcome to the show, caller, first name or initial. Where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. It's Rebecca, and I'm calling from the Bay Area. How are you?
Well, I'm doing wonderfully, Rebecca.
Good.
And let's see, you're in the Bay Area, so that's San Francisco.
Yeah.
One of my favorite places. Okay, let's get down to business with you. The first thing is you're on target. You're doing what you need to do. Keep on filling out the applications. Apparently there's something that you're looking for, and you are going to find that you're going to fit a niche of interest that you have had for a long period of time, and there's going to be an open door for you. But just keep on moving forward. Don't assume that there's not going to be an opportunity, because that's not the truth. You are definitely going to have an opportunity open up, but it's going to come about in a very unlikely environment. So let's say, and this is an extreme, I had a guest on earlier who's a firefighter paramedic. Let's say something opened up at a fire department. I'll just use that as an example.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe you were someone that was really interested in chemistry or environmental issues. And you go there and they say, yeah, we'll hire you. This is what we want you to do. And you probably say, gee whiz, they want me here? Why would that, you know, doesn't, I think maybe the environmental agency is where I would be. No, you might fit in just perfectly.
Oh.
Or you might find that forensic pathology, if that was an interest of yours, you might find that there's something with an insurance company that you'd be able to get into. You just never know. So keep on moving forward because you're, apparently you have a very specialized area of interest. And I'm just using those as examples, of course. But you just need to know that it's going to be a very unique environment that you would not expect would work out for you. So don't shut the door on anything. You never know what's going to link to what or who's going to know someone that may need your skills and your expertise. So you've got a very demanding year. 2010 is a hard-working year. That's nothing new for you. You've always had to work hard. So this is a year, though, that your hard work is going to pay off in ways that you'd never expect.
Okay.
So keep on moving forward. Do you have a question for me?
Yeah, I'm living in an apartment complex, and I'm trying to move to the top floor. And this process started in November and still has not been resolved. I'm wondering if there's going to be any resolution on this very quickly.
Quickly, no. I think you just need to be patient. I just relax about the whole thing. I wouldn't worry about it. You're going to find that there actually will be two units that are going to come available about the same time. Just keep your cool. Don't get pushy. You're right up there at the top of the list, and just say, just let me know. I can be up there, and nothing flat. I'm all ready to go. So just be prepared. It's going to happen. It could take as long as another 6 months. It could. It doesn't have to, but it could.
Okay.
So just relax about this. Don't get stressed. It's not worth losing sleep over.
Yeah, well, part of it is my neighbor upstairs is very noisy, so I don't get sleep. But so that's kind of funny you said don't lose sleep over it. So
yeah, well, don't. Get yourself something that makes white noise or buy some earplugs or do something.
Yeah.
But just know that this is going to pass. This is not going to continue forever, all right?
Okay.
But they have to wait until everything falls into place.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You have a great day and have a wonderful Valentine's.
Well, thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. Okay, let me finish this. Now, here we are. This is in the 1800s where this is reported. Chunks of ice? Now, why would that happen? Everything on this ship, including the rigging, became totally iced. They said the barometer went crazy. The side of the ship where this ball of light entered the water turned black. The copper plating blistered. And the wind on that side of the ship became like the wind of a hurricane. Now, there was an Eastern Airlines flight, number 539, on March 19th, 1963. That's right, March 19th again. It was flying from New York to Washington, D.C., when the plane got hit by lightning. Everybody was pretty much asleep. Everybody, obviously, was awakened. They saw, when they looked out the window, a glowing 10-inch blue-white solid-looking sphere go through the cockpit wall. It was hovering a few feet above the carpet. It went down the aisle of the plane to the end, where it merged into the metal casing and disappeared. Now, one of the passengers was Robert Jennison, and he's a professor of electronics at Kent University. He was at the time. And he said the ball gave off a very little heat and wasn't magnetic. The penknife and the tobacco tin in his pocket were unaffected. Now, on March 19, 1973, two geologists 10 miles east of Marfa, Texas, saw horses becoming terrified before two balls of light streaked by from a southwest direction. And on March 19, 1978, in Huskisson, Australia, there was a multicolored fireball 10 feet in diameter that went through the wall of a hotel bar. What is it about March 19th? Having a clue. This is Donna Sebo. We're out of time now. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Be back with you tomorrow, having conversations with Richard Bandler. You are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Hold that in your heart and your mind, because it's the truth. This is Donna. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.